I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Governor Bob Ferguson has cemented his legacy after only a few months in office. And hint, it's not a good one. Plus, West Coast attorneys general are coming to Seattle for a TDS convention. Should we go? And an ice cream company that supported the takeover of six square blocks of Seattle and criticized the police is now complaining about crime. Gee. Who would have guessed? That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, if you want to support our independent show, you can do so for just $5 a month. And in fact, right now, we have a goal of adding 300 paid subscribers in 30 days. So that's good for you because you can use the promo code 300 to get 30% off your first year, which I think is just a killer deal. Go to patreon.com/undivided. That's patreon.com/undivided and type in that promo code, the number 300. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. A special welcome to our newest subscribers. We appreciate your support of the show. It took, what, 4 months for Bob Ferguson to cement his legacy, a legacy I hope he is never able to escape from if we're doing our jobs well enough, and that is that he has just signed the largest tax increase in Washington state history into law, despite pretending that he would not do such a thing, saying over and over that he was dedicated to fiscal restraint. Of course, that was a lie, and he proved that it was a lie very, very quickly. So you can add that on to his legacy of being utterly obsessed with suing Donald Trump. I don't know which one is worse. TDS to the extreme? What do we call STDS? Severe TDS, and wasting all our time and money and doubling the size of his office going after Donald Trump, or hurting working class Washingtonians with $9 billion in new taxes. I'll let you decide which legacy is worse. And you know what? You can have multiple legacies. I think for him, he'll have to live with both. So I will say he gets up. This happened around 3 p.m. yesterday afternoon. So after our show, and I don't know, I'll give some credit to the reporters in the room who were trying to drill him down on, you know, what he said about not wanting to balance the budget with new taxes and then ultimately what he did. I think as we listen to some of this, my chief complaint, of course, and I'm sure yours will be, where was this level of questioning while this was all happening? And where has this level of questioning been for the last 5 to 10 years while Democrats were sending us toward a trajectory of spending more money than we're taking in and spending it on things that the government has no business doing and being involved in? So, you know, you get to this point and it's frustrating where the media has allowed, I think had the media not allowed this level of spending through their relentless questioning as they should have been doing all along, I don't know that we would have wound up with a, you know, $15 or so billion budget deficit in the first place. And so then when it's already done and pen's already on paper, they're like, well, this is, are you taxing families too much? And it's like, okay, late there, buckaroo. All right, so here's Bob Ferguson's message to families who are now going to be paying, you know, up to $4,000 or $5,000 additional every year just in these new taxes.
What's your message to working Washingtonians who are really worried about what the tax increases are going to mean for them and their families?
Yeah, my message would be that we hear those concerns and understand those concerns.
We just don't care.
And
about
that's
them.
Why we took the time to go through the budget line by line. Number two, what I would say is, look, inheriting a $16 billion budget shortfall was, you know,
what was it?
Was not the way I wanted to start as governor. And so what I would say is I feel that we worked hard to adopt a balanced approach that preserves core programs for those Washingtonians, right? If they've got a kid who wants to apprenticeship training or go to college, we maintain the most generous financial support for those kids of any state in the country. So I would say to those individuals is I hear those concerns. I hear it loud and clear. We did our best in this budget to balance our approach and also try to take an approach that sets us up for the future. I understand very clearly that this will be a challenging budget for Washingtonians. There's no two ways around that. You know, it will be. But I believe it's a balanced approach, and I think it sets us on a trajectory for a more sustainable future.
Yeah, balanced if you're a psychopath, honestly, because you look at some of the things they're spending money on, And frankly, I hate to say it, some of the things he just mentioned, oh, you know, well, families who are struggling ought to know if they're sending a kid into the trade schools, you know, we're helping with financial support. Okay, so what about for every family that's not sending a kid into the trades? And is that something that the government ought to even be doing? So, and his, as you listen to this, you'll hear all of the excuses we knew he would make, that we already predicted that he would make. You know, we did the best we could. We took a hard look at it. Remember? God, I just got to go find that tweet. I was like, this is what Bob Ferguson will do. He'll say, oh, we're going to look really hard at the budget. We're going to do everything we can. And then he'll come out and he'll say, what? Oh, I had no choice, right? And he tries to separate himself from the situation. I inherited this. This was not of my own doing. Okay. It's definitely of your party's doing, right? Because they've been in control for 40 years in the governor's office and much of the last 25 complete control in the legislature. But also, who doubled the size of the attorney general's office over the last 12 years, which isn't cheap? Who did that so they could sue Donald Trump a bajillion times? It was you, Bob. And then you got into the governor's office and you're like, we need to cut the size of the attorney general's office. Interesting. So, no, he has a lot of blame in this, not to mention even before he was attorney general, when he was King County executive, he spiked taxes and signed off on like $1 billion in tax increases. So he's been pro-tax for a long time. And he didn't have to do this. You know, he makes it sound like there was no choice. But remember, Republicans had introduced a budget proposal that would have balanced the budget, had no new taxes. No new taxes. And Bob Ferguson claimed he was interested in looking at it, but did he really look at it? He was asked about that yesterday.
I know early on, the Senate Republicans offered a no new tax increase budget proposal. They were excited early on that you were considering it, looking at it. But then we ended up with giant tax increases. So many Washingtonians might say, you didn't keep your word. What do you say to that?
I think my word was that we need to have a balanced approach to balance this budget. I made it clear we weren't going to tax our way out of it. Rejected multiple proposals from my Democratic colleagues in the legislature on, I think first it was $21 billion and then $12 billion. So I think we got to a number on the revenue side that is balanced with billions and billions of dollars of cuts. And so we worked hard to try to find that balanced approach. And that's what a budget is.
Yeah, it's not a balanced approach, again. Also talked about the gas tax. So you're going to be paying 6 cents more in taxes per gallon starting this summer, when we already know that the climate commitment grift and all of that is already putting our gas prices through the roof. So he was asked about that.
The people say Washington expect us to invest in those projects, but we have limited revenue options right now. The gas tax, unfortunately, is one of them. So look, no one's excited about increasing the gas tax, I can assure you. But that was a bipartisan solution. I want to emphasize that. And I hope that's well covered, that was a bipartisan solution. And that was not easy, I can assure you, for the legislature to come together in a bipartisan fashion.
Did he mention it was bipartisan? He wanted to make sure that the gas tax isn't just on the shoulders of Democrats, which... Yes, I mean, there are some Republicans who supported the gas tax increase, but you have to understand that's the one area, the transportation budget, where they have a limited options for their revenue. And the one thing that they should be able to use to improve our roads and bridges, et cetera, and improve our ferry system, should be the hundreds of millions of dollars coming in from the climate commitment grift. Because the bulk of the money going into that fund is coming from who? You, at the gas pump. So drivers are paying for Jay Inslee's climate legacy to do nothing for the environment, yet that money is prohibited from being used for transportation projects. What sense in the world does that make? So you hamstring where you can get money for roads, et cetera, which inarguably is one of the very basic things the government does have to do. So like, you know, if any of these taxes you can find an excuse for, it's the increase in the gas tax. Now, I still don't like it, but if you can find an excuse for any of them, it's the one where you have to fix roads and bridges and you only have a certain area where you can get funding from. So it's just insane. This is an interesting one. So some of these taxes are big, big proposals like the business taxes, for instance, the ability of your local school districts to increase or send to voters massive increases for schools through property tax increases. Some of them are small, but at the end of the day, it adds up for people who are just trying to live and enjoy their lives. You know, the cost of getting is it called a Discover Pass? Yeah, I should know. Discover Pass went up 50%. It's more expensive to get hunting licenses, fishing licenses. They had all these taxes in there like that make it more expensive to go on vacation, to go to sporting events, to drink craft beer, and all these things. They're just nickel-diming the joy out of being a Washingtonian, and Ferguson was asked just that.
Republicans have said that Washington Democrats are taxing the joy out of Washington. Mm-hmm. I mean, would you agree that the average Washingtonian can expect life to become more expensive in this state?
I would agree that when I was campaigning, I emphasized affordability. During that campaign, we were unaware of a $16 billion budget shortfall, as you know. And so what I would say when it comes to affordability is I feel I was very clear with the legislature on bringing down what would have been significantly higher taxes, to put it mildly, down to what I think is a more balanced approach. Look, am I excited about those revenues? Of course not. The other thing I'll say is, look, we'll see what comes from the Trump administration. We'll see what comes with the economy.
I was waiting for it. I was like, he hasn't blamed Trump
yet. My goal is to put us on financial footing so we're not having this conversation every single year as long as I'm governor.
Yeah, except you just signed like all these gifts to the unions. I mean, we're giving money to the WEA to do a training program that has resulted in virtually nothing. You know, now our unemployment system is going to be helping workers go on strike comfortably. I mean, all these insane things. And of course, yes, laser hair removal for transgender inmates. So don't tell me that you did everything that you could do when we're still paying for boob jobs for Joe Schmo in the prison system at Monroe to be transferred comfortably to the women's prison. Give me a break. I was happy to see Chris Daniels at Como News talk about this issue we discussed on the show yesterday, this absolute lie that Bob Ferguson has peddled on police funding. He's out on the news, bah, 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 saying that he fulfilled one of his key campaign promises to set aside $100 million in grants to help hire more law enforcement officers. But as we pointed out on the show, as Chris Daniels points out in his question to Bob Ferguson, that's really not what the grants are required to be used for at all.
The bill on police and hiring more police officers, the $100 million, the language that was ultimately signed does not force local jurisdictions to hire police officers. What can you say about that agreement to not only allocate the money, but not force local jurisdictions to actually use the money to hire cops?
I'm very confident we're going to see a renewed focus and increase in the hiring of law enforcement officers. What I can say is in many conversations I had with law enforcement folks across the state, they really view this as a big step forward. Is it perfect? Of course not. Is it exactly why I would have written it? Of course not. But I believe it's a significant step forward. It'll make a big difference. Thank you for asking, hey, we're 50th now per capita number of law enforcement officers. Will this move us up on the list? Look, my recollection is that we're a ways from 49th, just to be clear. I could be wrong about that, but my recollection at some point seeing the chart and realizing we're not just last, but we're some distance from 49th. You know, that said, there are signs of improvement in this area. I think this will help. City of Seattle, I think if I recall correctly, for the first time is not losing law enforcement officers. I think there was a very slight uptick. I think all those are positive signs. So look, no one grant program is going to solve this problem, that is for sure. No one training facility is going to solve this problem, that's for sure. No one city is going to solve it. But like any big problem, which we have in this regard, it's going to take a lot of folks leaning into it. And I'm confident this will help.
Yeah. Then why'd you promise to fix it? You literally ran a campaign ad saying we're 50th, dead last for the number of police officers with your serious face. When I'm governor, I'll fix it. No, you're not going to fix it. One of the only things that'll fix it is you not being governor, and someone being governor who has a track record of supporting law enforcement, not politically prosecuting them unsuccessfully for murder, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he didn't answer Chris Daniels' questions. I mean, basically what happened is the progressives who control the legislature, they don't want, especially when they're, you know, having to look at the budget mess they created and find things to cut. You think that those cop haters want to give $100 million to law enforcement? No. So what do? They watered it down so you can use that grant funding to hire counselors if you want. You can use that grant funding for emergency management. God, I think you can also use it for like hazardous waste removal or something dumb like that. And then if a department even wants to see that money, they have to pass a local sales tax to help fund law enforcement. So that, I mean, Democrats love that. God, how can we tie hiring more officers to increasing taxes? And on top of that, the agencies that apply for the grant have to basically raise their hand and take an oath that they will patrol the streets of their cities in the image of how progressive socialist, you know, anti-cop activists want them patrolled. They have to attest to their willingness to violate federal immigration laws. So I don't know how many agencies besides the ones in very progressive areas are going to meet those standards that are laid out for these grants. And those agencies in very progressive areas are probably going to spend the money on peer counselors and unarmed emergency responders. It's insane. I mean, but Bob Ferguson, you know, the answer he just gave there, gosh, this pisses me off. The answer he just gave there isn't the tone he took when he signed that bill laying out the $100 million grant. He just yesterday presented it to the public before the media started asking questions, presented it to the public as him fulfilling the campaign promise for $100 million to hire more officers. He didn't talk about the nuance of it. Well, it's not exactly what I would have wanted. And, you know, it's not going to fix the problem overnight. No, he's like, I did what I said I was going to do. And then he gets called on it. And he's like, okay, well, it's not going to do what I said it's going to do. So what? Wild stuff. So that was, again, Chris Daniels with Como News, one of the last remaining competent reporters in legacy media. Although, I will give Como credit for this tweet that was making its rounds in conservative circles yesterday. Like, Como, is that you? What is this? They sent out about Bob's press conference. Listen to this. Governor Bob Ferguson stood behind a podium for roughly an hour and a half, acknowledging he was agreeing to do what he said he didn't want to do just 2 months ago and significantly raise taxes. Gotta love that. That's a very good description of that press conference. He's like, oh, I am doing what I told you I wasn't going to do 2 months ago and significantly raising taxes. So credit to Como on that, although that credit is going to be very short-lived, as I'll discuss momentarily, but had to give them credit on that. So yeah, it's Bob Ferguson's legacy. He'll never get away from the fact that he signed the largest tax increase in state history into law in his first few months in office, his first year on the job. And so we need to make sure that we're reminding people of that every step of the way as gas prices go up this summer, as the cost of goods go up, and they try to blame it on tariffs. You look at, hey, look at these increases in the B&O tax. So that is going to significantly increase costs for families. The Climate Commitment Act is getting more and more stringent with the carbon credits that they're auctioning off. And so that's going to mean higher prices at the pump, at the grocery store, and higher energy costs. So, you know, the media is not going to do it for us. We have to be the ones, you have to be the ones to remind your family and friends if they're feeling the pinch about why that is. I have a segment coming up that I just want to set the stage for what's going to happen as soon as rent control takes effect, because then you're also going to see these increased costs to own a home, even if you're already in it, to buy a home if you haven't bought one already, and then to rent. It's going to become nearly impossible for working class families to afford to live here, as if it's not more difficult already. Just really quickly, since I gave Como a little bit of credit, I also have to take it away. What is wrong with them? I said when they upended the parental rights initiative, I was like, just watch the media use the captured language of Democrats and paint this as a bill protecting kids, like, from their evil parents. This is a headline from Como News. Washington governor signs controversial, okay, I'll give him that, student rights bill into law. A student rights bill? Law of students' rights signed, it says. A student's rights bill? I hate to tell you this, students have no rights. People always, oh, the kids have rights. Parents don't own them. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Till they're 18, the parents ought to have a right to know what's happening with their kids at school, to frame it. That's the captured language of the Democrats. What did they frame it as? A student's rights bill. That's not what it's about. This is about taking rights away from parents, not giving more rights to students. So disappointing. And then Nicole was searching elsewhere. There's hardly any coverage of it. Really hardly any coverage in the local media about them taking this extraordinary step a year later of upending a voter initiative that nearly 500,000 people signed over what was clearly an effort to protect radical gender ideology in schools. I mean, you looked at the bill signing yesterday and that was very clear. They packed it full of transgender people, which is fine, but that's what it's about. It's not about like education or academics. It's about creating a safe space bubble for kids who think they're transgender in school and making sure their parents don't intervene. Wild. Other thing I want to talk about really quick. Sorry, Nicole, taking this out the window. Why won't the media talk about detransitioners? Why won't the media talk? They will talk over and over and over about trans issues, trans rights, trans pride, whatever it is. They'll talk to transgender students, to their families, to teachers who are transgender. How many stories like that do we see? Why is it that the media won't, the legacy media won't platform detransitioners? I was just thinking about that after we did that interview with Ari on Sundays with Subscribers, which was just phenomenal. And to hear this really sad story about what happened to this young man convinced he was a woman and cut off his genitals and all these things. And I don't know what it is. Is it because it goes against like this narrative from the progressives and they'll be called transphobes? Is it because you have to get into those really gruesome medical details to talk about what these people are doing to their bodies? Is it because they support it? I don't know what it is. It's really bothering me, though. It's really bothering me. So anybody with legacy media, if you want to connect to a detransitioner and you're interested in doing actual journalism and in looking into this issue of what's happening in our schools and what our schools are indoctrinating these children in and sending like fourth graders home thinking that they're a boy when they're really a girl. If you want to do an actual story, we've had multiple detransitioners on the show. We have a whole network of detransitioners who were happy to connect with you so you can hear their stories. I dare you, reverse psychology, I dare you to talk to a detransitioner. Also just crazy, the hate and vitriol being directed at Ari. The detransitioner we had on the show on Sunday. Insane. He was showing me some of his DMs. So you've got all these like transgender people who absolutely hate him for saying he's not trans anymore. Oh, and they're like, well, why do you still dress like a girl? Why do you still sound like a girl? Why do you still have long hair? So, which is so counter to their narrative that gender doesn't have to match how you feel on the inside, doesn't have to match how you are on the outside, and, you know, be your true self and all of that. So it's like, you know, be your true self. Trans is beautiful. Gender is fluid. Ari's like, okay, well, I don't want to be a girl anymore. You horrible, hateful, bigot person. It's wild. I think they feel like the jig is up. Is it the gig is up or the jig is up? The jig is up. Is someone created a montage of my struggles with words? I really feel like they feel like the jig is up and it's sort of crashing in on them and they're panicking and they're backed into a corner and they don't know what to do, which I think is good. All right, one more thing I want to talk about, get your guys' opinion on what we should do. So there's a TDS convention coming to town Monday, June 2nd. So pretty soon it's going to be at Town Hall, Seattle. And I call it a TDS convention because all of the West Coast attorneys general are coming to Washington, coming to Seattle to host a town hall. It's called Community Impact Town Hall, Fighting to Protect Our Democracy and Rule of Law. So it's the California Attorney General, Rob Bonta, the Washington Attorney General, Nick Brown, who is one of the most disappointing results of 2024. He's really gone downhill fast. And then Dan Rayfield, the Attorney General of Oregon. So they're going to get up and talk about how righteous they are and how they've spent virtually, you know, the entirety of the last 4 months not doing their jobs for their citizens, but just suing Donald Trump like their predecessors have. So tell me if this is very not undivided, okay? So what did liberals do when Republicans were holding town halls and stuff? They bought up all the tickets and took up all the seats and either didn't attend, so it looked like there was low attendance, or they attended and they, you know, trolled them and yelled at them and screamed at them. Is it time to just adopt the tactics of the far left? Is that what we have to do at this point? I don't like that. I have a show called Undivided, you know, where it's common ground through common sense. But I always say you can't find common ground with people. There's no common sense without sanity. So, like, is that the best way to stop this behavior is just to say, okay, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to buy up all the tickets to this event, and then we're just not going to show up. Or is it better to go and to disrupt it?
Well, by disrupting. No, and I don't think it's necessary to disrupt. I think we can go in with smarter arguments, right? Because the left typically goes in and just creates chaos.
Yeah.
I say the right goes in and presents, you know, good arguments.
Yeah, I don't know, though, that they're answering questions at this event. Now, a lot of the times at these town halls, what they'll do is you submit the questions to a moderator. Mm-hmm. The moderator is friendly toward the cause. And then the moderator gets to choose what questions they ask. So if you go in there and you're asking questions about, hey, why are you wasting all this time? Because it doesn't say in here explicitly that they're going to take questions from the crowd. I imagine, though, they'll have moderated questions. So then it's a matter of what questions does the moderator ask? Because there are a lot of, yeah, and you're right. I shouldn't be saying let's disrupt it. I don't mean that. But there's a lot of legitimate hard questions that you could ask these individuals. And some of the lawsuits I've agreed with. I don't know that Washington State had to be the one to lead the charge, you know, on the birthright citizenship issue, for instance. Trump's order trying to nix birthright citizenship is just unconstitutional. And I don't agree with it either. And so there's some things, but I mean, Nick Brown is like, what is it, dozens at this point? And he's that's all he's talking about. And so you could look at all these other issues that are happening in the state of Washington, California, Oregon. I mean, these states are in ruin. And they're obsessed with Donald Trump and all these ideological issues. So I don't know. You guys tell me. What should we do? Should we go? Should I go? Should you go? Should we buy tickets and not show up so it's empty?
There's a part of me that thinks that the people that go to this like are not persuadable.
No, they're not persuadable. No.
I don't know. Do we care? Just, do we even care that it happens?
Do we even care? You're right. Do I even care? Gosh, because you know what? Maybe I don't care.
Because to some extent, I think that they're just attention cravers. Because, you know, the things, Trump gets them attention. Doing things that actually benefit Washingtonians is not getting the attention that they crave.
Right.
Suing Trump, attention.
And they come there and it'll be all like white 60-something progressives, joke, probably crying. Probably. I bet you go, you see a 60-something progressive woman in tears.
Oh, just
for sure.
Angry.
A lot of like pink, blue, purple hair, I imagine, which I think we need to look into that. RFK Jr. should look into whether some sort of chemical is being put into those specific hair color dyes that's altering the makeup of someone's brain.
I actually had a conversation this weekend about that because my niece dyed her, put some blue in her hair. And I was like, way to take back coloring your hair from the lefties. And she's like, thank you.
Yeah, I don't get
because
it.
Because
it
looks
like
classy
it.
For her.
No, it doesn't ever look classy.
No,
it can never look. No, it doesn't. I haven't even seen it. I don't know what she looks like. There is no way that blue, purple, or pink hair looks classy on anyone.
Okay. It's not
sorry
full.
If you have. Sorry. It's
just not a
true.
Full head okay, of color. It's like putting some blue in. It looks cool.
You said it's your niece?
It's my niece.
We might be able to use her to infiltrate, though, now, Samantha events, if she's got the blue hair. Anyway, moving on. We have a lot to get to, including this crazy Molly Moon story. But coming up next, I want you guys to get a good understanding of what is going to happen here with rents and the cost of living. So some of these taxes are going to impact property taxes, the cost of owning a home, the cost of renting and buying. So we're going to kind of level set on that as we move forward. Really, what I want to do is tell you what's going to happen and predict it. So in 6 months to a year, I can come back and say I was right about this. First, our friend Zach Abraham, don't forget this Thursday, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time, he's having a Know Your Risk live webinar that you can tune into totally for free and hear what he has to say about how tariffs might be impacting your retirement portfolio, what you should be looking out for, what's a reasonable sort of, I mean, risk is always involved, but what's reasonable risk and what is reasonable fluctuation? Again, totally free to attend. He'll also just be talking about kind of a longer term outlook, 2025, some of the other policies of the Trump administration. And of course, they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So sign up for Zach's free webinar, Tariff Edition, Thursday, May 22nd. Register now at KnowYourRisk. Yeah. Sorry. Tomorrow.
Holy moly.
Tomorrow. I don't know. I lose track of days. I lose track of time. One of our viewers, Matt Gilbert, called me out because I was up at 4:30 a.m. tweeting because I couldn't sleep again. So for all I know, we're in July. I don't even know what day it is. But I know that Zach's live webinar is tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. You can sign up totally free. You do need to register, though. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. And that way you'll get the link to join. And then be on the lookout for a new episode of Doge Watch with Zach Abraham tonight. Okay, so Zillow is out with this report, and usually I don't like these like Zillow reports. They seem kind of like self-serving, but I think this one sets a good kind of barometer for where the rental market is at nationally, so we can compare it to what happens once rent control actually takes effect in the state of Washington. It's also important to realize, so this is their rental market report, April 2025. It's national, right? Which I think is good because it's important to realize, like, this isn't the only place in America where rents have been going up. Other And even in red areas, you're seeing, especially in Florida, I mean, but for different reasons, right? So in Florida, you're seeing, for instance, rents go through the roof in Miami. Well, why is that? Well, the tech sector, a lot of tech jobs have been moving from the West Coast to Miami. So you can look at it on an individual basis and sort of see what's happening. But overall, just compared to 2020, renters have to earn $100,000 a year to afford rent in their city in twice as many markets than in 2020. So nationwide, the salary required to afford rent is 20% higher than it was 5 years ago. So in twice as many cities, just to set that, twice as many cities in America, you now have to make over $100,000 a year to be able to reasonably afford rent. And what's reasonable, right? So the what they always say is you shouldn't spend no more than 30% of your income on your rent or your mortgage. So that's sort of what we say, reasonable amount. So Seattle has not hit that threshold yet. Seattle is not one of the cities in America where to reasonably afford rent, you have to make over $100,000 a year. But we are very, very, very close to that. So remember this number. So right now in Seattle, 2025, Zillow says you have to make $90,000 a year here to comfortably afford rent. And that's up 23.2% since April 2020. So rents are going up here. Rents are expensive here. And that's important to consider when we talk about and or against rent control. Because I'm not saying, like, I am not saying that rents aren't high. I'm not saying that rents aren't increasing at an unsustainable rate for working class people. That's not what I'm saying, and it's never been what I've said. What I am saying is that capping rents is not going to fix the underlying problem. And here's why. So if you look at the number of markets where renters need to earn $100,000 to afford rent. So Boston, New York, Miami, San Jose, Riverside, San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco. In San Francisco, you have to earn $124,000 to be able to reasonably afford rent. Why does it stand out to you? What do they have in San Francisco? They have rent control. They also pass rent control in Boston. Rent control has been a thing in New York for a long time. A lot of other cities in California have some semblance of rent control. But their rents are still increasing at rates above and beyond a lot of areas of the country. And the amount of money that you need to earn to afford rent, it continues to go up. So you have these cities and you might say, well, Brandy, that's because rent control was instituted in those cities because those are cities where rent is really, really high. But again, rent control hasn't fixed it. And rent control will never fix it. Because even if you look at, let's say that I support Washington's new rent control law, which what does it do? It caps rent at 7%, rent increases at 7% per year, up to 10% for inflation, okay? So even if, and the progressives are going to try to use this against me, I'm sure, even if you increase rent 7% a year, that's like still too much for people's pay to keep up with. So like the idea of capping it, right, at 7% a year. So over 3 years, like you could increase it 21%, essentially. Did I do the math right? 21%. I don't think that's acceptable. So I don't think it's acceptable for renters to have their rent go up 7% a year. The difference is in how you fix it and who you blame for that. I mean, it's totally unsustainable. But capping it at 7% a year doesn't do anything. Because again, 7% a year is still too high. Capping it at 5% is still unsustainable. 5% increases a year are still too high. The only way to fix it is to actually reduce the cost of owning a rental unit. The only way to fix it is to have vacancy rates at a reasonable level, because if you have about 10% vacancy, I think is the sweet spot, then it's a supply and demand issue. So you also have to have what? More units available. You have to have people coming in, building new units, so the supply is at a good level, and then you don't have people tearing each other into bits trying to vie for the same apartment, because that's what drives the price up, right? So everything you need to do to actually help renters make sure that the cost of rent isn't far surpassing their increased pay, The only way to fix that is by increasing the amount of units available and by driving down, making sure that you're not increasing costs for owning a rental unit. But the legislature just did the opposite of all of that. So let's just put rent control totally aside for a second. So what do? They just gave local school levies, local school districts, more power to increase levies. So your property taxes in an area like King County, where they pass everything, are going to go up dramatically. The Climate Commitment Act is increasing the cost of energy, and that's going to continue to go way, way up. So who pays for that, right? Well, you're going to pass that along to the renter. That goes on to the person who owns the unit that they're renting out or whatever it is. The regulations for builders. All of that has made Washington State a place that's not desirable to build. So you're not going to have these new units coming online. And it's also increased the cost of having one of those units. So rent control, to me, it's like, if your issue is really to help renters, like, you take rent control completely out of the equation. So what I think we're going to see here is on that map, can you pull that map back up, Nicole? On the number of markets where renters need to earn $100,000 to afford rent. So Seattle, I think, will be on that next year. I think Seattle will absolutely, despite rent control, will be on that map next year. So hold me to that. And I do think that you're going to see, when Zillow does this next year, for the year-over-year increases, it'll be 7% every single year. Because we can predict that, right? Because they just jacked up costs of home ownership and owning a rental unit. So you're going to see landlords absolutely like clockwork, 7%, 7%, 7%. And I don't blame them. It sucks for renters, but it's not the fault of landlords. It's the fault of leaders in Olympia who, like, they don't understand some of the places in the country where it's hard, it's most expensive to rent. You know, they have rent control policies, and the rent control isn't fixing that situation. So you have to drive down. You have to drive up the number of units. You have to drive down the cost of maintaining those units. That's the only way to fix it. Instead, they did the exact opposite. They made it more expensive to own a home in a unit and an apartment building or a duplex, whatever it is, more expensive to do that. And they instituted rent control, which will drive down the number of people who are willing to come here and develop and build more units. It's asinine. It's absolutely crazy. So just watch next year what happens in the city of Seattle. You're going to have to make more than $100,000 a year to be able to afford rent here. Wild. And it's a statewide policy, so it's going to make rent worse everywhere else as well. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington. If you are one of these landlords and you're trying to think about, can I even navigate the situation, become a member of RHA, reach out to them for advice. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. All right. A woke ice cream, not even Ben and Jerry's. What is with it with ice cream companies being so far left? Is it in the ice cream?
Oh, yeah. What is the deal?
Is it because more people on the left are obese? And so ice cream people, you know, obese, and they're just like, no.
I don't know that that's the correlation.
Is that not true? Is it not true? I think I made that up.
That might be made up, but, okay. You know.
Anyway, a lot of ice cream shop owners are really far left, and I don't know why, but there's one in particular in Seattle, Molly Moons, who came out against police aggressively in 2020, and now the owner of Molly Moons is complaining about crime on Capitol Hill. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, so I got to go back to 2020 here. I was at Fox 13 at the time, covering the whole Summer of Love rioting and all of that. And a couple days after CHOP was cleared, so the autonomous zone that they'd taken over, which included a Molly Moons ice cream shop, was in that zone. I got this tip, and this is my post on Twitter at the time. Sign posted at Molly Moon's Ice Cream near Seattle PD East Precinct and now defunct CHOP Zone. It says, "Police officers, Molly Moon's is a gun-free zone. Please do not come inside if you are wearing a firearm." So they posted this sign. Hey, it's a gun-free zone. You can't even come in here. Which, at the time, given what was happening in that area and the anti-police sentiment and the fact that this was an ice cream shop a lot of officers went to because it was so close to the East Precinct, it felt very clear to everyone that this was a political statement from Molly Moons. It wasn't really about whether the cops were wearing a gun, because, as you know, a cop can't be in uniform without their gun. So they can't just, like, lock it up at the precinct and wear their whole uniform and walk over to Molly Moons for ice cream. It was about Molly Moons not wanting cops in their store. And this was a way to prevent cops from being in the store. And in fact, at the time, I had done a story at Fox 13 and reached out to Molly Moons, and the owner like doubled down on it. I just pulled the quote quick. I am anti the current police system. Yeah, I think we need major reform, the owner told me. So at the time, after they put that up, I'm anti the current police system. So didn't say, oh no, this sign isn't about being anti-police. We just don't want guns in this store and blah, blah. No, she's like, no, I'm anti-police basically. So totally anti-cop and supportive of the autonomous zone. So they're in the middle of this thing, totally supporting it. This is a post of theirs on Instagram at the time. This is a photo of Chaz, the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, a part of Capitol here near our shop, taken over by peaceful protesters. It's in the process of transforming into beautiful Black Lives Matter art now that the police barricade is gone, and is another way our community is standing up for Black lives in our city and country. We recently sent a newsletter to our customers to share how we're contributing to the Black Lives Matter movement. So they were totally all for it, peaceful. It was never peaceful. There was never a moment from its inception that the autonomous zone was peaceful. But here's Molly Moons. Oh, cops can't come in here. Peaceful zone, peaceful protesters standing up for Black people. So not long after that, we already knew that Molly Moons' owner was a total hypocrite. Because what did the owner Molly Moons do? Well, they turned around and sued the city over the autonomous zone. They filed a lawsuit basically saying, like, the cops didn't do enough to protect businesses. Like, and I don't know if their suggestion was basically, oh, we spoke out against police and in favor of the zone, so police just decided not to help us at all, and we have free speech rights, whatever it is. So total hypocrites. Supported CHOP, loved it, called it peaceful, turned around, sued the city of Seattle, saying, oh, it created an unsafe environment. Yeah, no shit. So now there's another layer to Molly Moon's hypocrisy. This is from our friend Ari Hoffman at the Post-Millennial. Molly Moon's homemade ice cream owner complains about Seattle Crisis Center after backing autonomous zone and defund the police. So it says a tense community meeting hosted at Seattle University, the owner of Molly Moon's joined other residents in blasting the county's plan to convert a polyclinic building into a 24/7 mental health and substance use crisis center. The owner of Molly Moons acknowledged the need for such services, but she argued Capitol Hill is the wrong location. Quote, we are struggling. The businesses here are struggling. The residents are unsafe. Do they need to come to a neighborhood in absolute dire crisis for the last 5, 6, 7 years? You guys, it stuns me, the lack of self-awareness. This is like Gavin Newsom levels of gaslighting and or lack of self-awareness. So cops suck, don't even come into our store. We don't want you here. Defund the police, cops bad, Black Lives Matter, autonomous protest zone, totally safe, except we're gonna sue over it because it's not safe. And now you're gonna complain that you don't want a crisis care facility in your backyard, despite the fact it's a very progressive thing and you're a very progressive company, because you say that businesses are struggling, residents feel unsafe, and you're in a dire crisis for the last 5, 6, 7 years. Gee, what was happening 5 to 6 years ago? I am really trying to remember. Oh yeah, the Capitol Hill autonomous zone that you cheered on. And that area has gotten substantially worse since then. One of the reasons is so many businesses decided not to reopen in that area because of what happened during Chaz Chop, and they can blame it on the pandemic or whatever it is. No, we talked to business owners at the time who were not going to reopen because of what happened during Chaz Chop, and they got their windows broken. It was just sort of the last straw. So what happens in a neighborhood when you have businesses that start to leave and you have storefronts that are just vacant? Well, then you have that element. You don't have positive foot traffic. You get negative foot traffic. So Capitol Hill was already on the decline long before the pandemic, which people will blame it on, or the Capitol Hill occupied protests because of the crime and the substance abuse and all of that. But that significantly exacerbated the situation. And Molly Moons at the time, very influential, I would say, Seattle business, they could have spoken out and said, hey, we're trying to run a business here. You know, you guys peacefully protest by all means, but violence, vandalism, all that stuff, you know, kicking police out of their precinct, patrolling the area, and this is one of the funny hypocritical things, they patrolled that area with AR-15 rifles, citizens did, these Antifa, AR-15 rifles that had been handed to them by the CHOP warlord out of the trunk of a car. And Molly Moon supported that, yet put a sign on their window saying, we're a gun-free zone and cops can't come in with their guns. Figure that one out. So, God, now I can't have Ben and Jerry's? And now I can't have Molly Moon's? What is the name of the nice coffee, or the nice, ice cream place down at Pike Place that supports our show?
Well,
it's not really ice cream. It's a
creamery.
Creamery. I always have a hard time with their name, even though we met them, we went there, and I just have a hard time pronouncing the name of it. Hellenica?
Yes.
Is that how you say it, though? It's right down there on Pike Place.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hellenica, I mean, that's our American version of saying it, I suppose.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it. But they don't support any of this crap. So go by next time you're down at Pike Place. I think they're right by the original Starbucks, right?
Yes.
Go in there and say, hey, we're buying ice cream here, because you guys aren't crazy lefties. And all the other ice cream shops are crazy lefties. So it's only one left, you know? It's only one left. All right. We have a second dose of unbelievable coming up next. The Pierce County, the union that represents Pierce County Sheriff's deputies is basically telling deputies to look for a job elsewhere. Sounds crazy? It is. First, our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com wants to help you sell your home. He wants to help you get top dollar for your home. And that's what we all want, right? If you're selling your home, you want to get every squeery penny out of it that you can. And Wes is the expert at this. I mean, you know, it's not really the kind of market right now where you can just sort of list your home and come what may. I mean, there was definitely a point in time where that was the case. But hey, there might need to be some things that you do, some cosmetic upgrades to make it more appealing to potential buyers. And that's the kind of stuff Wes loves. He's only going to recommend cosmetic upgrades that he thinks you will get back plus some at closing. And by the way, you can pay for any of those upgrades at closing as well, so you don't have to come out of pocket, which I think takes a lot of stress out of the process. But this is still a seller's market right now, for sure. There's a lot of pent up buyer demand. And so if you're putting the work in that needs to be done with Wes, so if Wes is putting the work in that needs to be done, your home is going to stand out on the market, for sure. Your listing is going to shine. It's going to look better than the other ones, and that's the key to getting feet in the door and offers on the table. I don't know why my read is so aggressive today. Offers on the table. So reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. It is simply a better way to sell your home. All right. So there have been contract negotiations going on at the Pierce County Sheriff's Office. And remember, they have a new far left, anti-police, pro-police defunding Pierce County executive, which I'll never forgive the citizens of Pierce County for not voting for Kelly Chambers and instead voting in wackadoodle Ryan Mello, who's so far left. I mean, especially after you had Bruce Dammeyer as a county executive, who's the nicest, calmest, most reasonable, capable man. Unfortunately, they have term limits, so he had to go, and you picked Ryan Mello? Hell no. It's just wild. So apparently, Ryan Mello is refusing to increase pay for the sheriff's deputies there. So this is how the police union responded to that. So the guild said to our members, I'm going to read a big chunk of this because it's pretty astounding that they'd say this. Your guild negotiations team has been in the bargaining process with the county for over a year with no headway. The county executive's representatives and your guild are nowhere near reaching an agreement that we as a team representing you feel is fair. Staffing levels are the same, or at the same level as 20 years ago. We are last in staffing numbers for the nation. You have a heavier workload than any agency in our county, let alone probably the state. If you were on the fence waiting for the county to come to a fair and acceptable wage and compensation package to make a decision about your life and family's future, stop waiting. We are aware that there are individuals in our membership wanting fair compensation for their work and safety conditions. We are here to tell you, if you are waiting for meaningful compensation from the county executive's office regarding your future, he is not willing to compensate you for it. And we, as a bargaining team, suggest you further your professional career elsewhere. That's nuts. Mm-hmm. We, as a team, asked the county for a written offer that we could present to our membership to show you how the Pierce County Executive's team values the work you do. They provided it to us, and we will present it to you. We will conduct a membership vote in the coming weeks about the proposal. For your convenience, I have attached a few hyperlinks so you can look at what other agencies think you are worth. And they put hiring links in there for City of Bonnie Lake, City of Tacoma, City of Puyallup, Gig Harbor, Lakewood. That's some pretty stunning stuff. Now, I'm not a dummy. They're in contract negotiations. They know that they're going to put this out and people are going to cover it, right? So there's some strategy here. So don't think that I don't know or understand that there is some strategy here. But it did elicit coverage. Como News spoke with Guild President Sean Darby and the sheriff there, Keith Swank.
Is that an acceptable offer?
Absolutely not. No, it's insulting. We are about 30% below the Tacoma Police Department.
Mello's staff said he wasn't available to speak to us, but in a statement told me the contract offers competitive pay and robust benefits.
Not competitive at all.
Both the Guild and County Sheriff Keith Swank say it's not even close.
The executive is holding this up. The executive does not believe in compensating you the way it should, way you should deserve to be compensated.
Yeah. So I do think there's some strategy there, certainly from the sheriff's office and the Guild, who wants them to say, who wants the county executive's office to believe that we're really trying to get our deputies to go elsewhere. They don't want that. You know, I don't think any of them want that, but they're saying that's how dire it is. And if agencies around them, and if they're literally waiting to make a decision based on their family's future, hoping and praying for some significant increase in pay, that's not coming, I guess, yeah, you should be looking elsewhere. One of the other things I'll note is you have all these other public sector unions who are going to be on the picket line before you know it. Why? Because the state just passed pay for striking workers. So they have this added teachers, health, whatever it is, teachers, healthcare workers, etc. They have an added ability to force their pay to go higher. Guess who can't strike? Cops can't strike. I mean, arguably, teachers aren't supposed to strike under law, but the state forgives it because, you know, they're teachers. But police can't strike, and I don't think police would strike because they know that literally people could die if they go on strike. So they're in these negotiations, and they have no leverage. They don't have a threat of strike as leverage. And Ryan Mello knows that they just have to kind of take what they're given, so to speak. But do they? No, they can go somewhere else, where their pay is higher. And to have the same staffing levels that you had 20 years ago, when the population has increased exponentially, you are taking on more work and crime is higher. So you're doing way more. You're in a way dangerous situation because you're short-staffed. But Ryan Mello hates cops. I mean, that's who he is. So of course he's not gonna give them more money. Now we did get, this is, they sent us this morning. So we got a response from the office of Pierce County Executive Ryan Mello as we inquired about this morning. Here's the statement we got. Public safety is one of the executive's top priorities. No, it's not. Okay, check that off the list. It's like, just because you say it doesn't make it true. Pierce County greatly values the service, professionalism, and dedication of our sheriff's office employees and remains committed to ensuring they are compensated competitively and treated with the respect their service deserves. The current proposal includes significant pay increases and robust benefits that are both competitive and sustainable. We believe it reflects the critical work of our law enforcement professionals while also meeting our responsibility to the residents of Pierce County. The question is, how many DEI programs are you funding, Ryan Mello? How many DEI nonsense ideological programs are you funding instead of giving them more pay? So I would say, you know, if you want to work for an agency that values you as a member of law enforcement, you have to work for a government that values you as a member of law enforcement. And Pierce County government under Ryan Mello is not it. I do think it's pretty astonishing, though, that you have the Guild coming out and saying, just go elsewhere. I don't think they want that. I think it's a bargaining tactic. But at the same time, some deputies might take them up on that if they do not believe that a good offer is coming down the pipeline. All right. I've told you guys, take the First Mark challenge. If you're looking to save a little bit of money on your insurance, maybe you got a renewal notice. That's when people tend to say, okay, the renewal is going way up. Let's look for different insurance. Don't look for it yourself. Have First Mark Insurance do it. It's totally free to take the First Mark challenge. And they're going to be honest with you. If they can save you money, great. But they're not going to force you into something that they don't think is going to work for you and your family. Our friend Brock Heward took the First Mark challenge, and it was a First Mark challenge victory.
The word that comes to my mind is a word I use a lot on my sports show, and that is connective tissue. It's important in team building. It's important as players in a locker room to be connected to others. And when it comes to insurance, it's so complicated. It's so stressful. You just don't even want to deal with it. And that is where the connective tissue of having a pro, having a broker, having a partner, and most of all, having a teammate like First Mark Insurance, it was the best connective tissue we could find.
Yeah, so you could be our next First Mark Challenge victory. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Set aside some time to take the First Mark Challenge today. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They're always going to have your best interest in mind. Hillsborough, Oregon, is the largest city in Washington County, Oregon, which is a troll. Why would you have a Washington County in Oregon? Population of Tacoma. Nicole, this is the stuff you're supposed to do.
I guess. I didn't know we were going to go into this.
100,000 people is the population of that city. The largest, Tacoma's a 250,000.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
For the record, not that this they're patrolling. Came in just as we were starting the show.
No, it's not Nicole's fault. I go off on tangents. All right. Okay, let's get to some national news. I want to skip ahead, Nicole, if that's all right. Mm-hmm. The mayor of San Francisco made the weirdest comment, and I don't know if he thought he wasn't being recorded, but there's this guy named J.J. Smith. And he is an independent, I don't even know if I'd call him a journalist. He's like an independent sort of guerrilla, like a Jonathan Cho, sort of, where he's out. He covers a lot of the homeless crisis, the substance abuse issue in San Francisco. And he documents it. He puts it online and a lot of people share it. He's just a guy who cares and it's like, this looks terrible and I want people to know. And he's made a name for himself in San Francisco doing this. Well, apparently the mayor of San Francisco, the new mayor, Daniel Lurie, does not like it. He does not like it. He's out on the streets and J.J. Smith is talking to him. And J.J. Smith is trying to show him a video on his phone that shows an area of the city where like families are having to hide their kids from people actively using fentanyl. And, you know, there's substance abuse, people similar to Seattle, open air markets where they're selling stolen goods and all this stuff. And so J.J. Smith is showing Mayor Daniel Leary this video. Listen to how the mayor responds.
This is what families have to go through. When they walk through there.
Wait, where are we talking about? On 6th Street or where?
This 16th.
16th? You don't have to tell me. I'm there every day.
I know. You see what the mother has to go through? They got to cover their children up to go through there.
And yeah. What do you think I'm doing, JJ?
Are you cleaning it up? I know you is. You clean. It takes time, though, but the
Let
people...
Let me just say one thing to you about you doing the videos and push them out. It's also... you can tell me I'm doing it, but it
You're
also
doing it.
Kills
I know you
our
are.
Economy.
Yeah.
Think about that. You know, we've got other people on Twitter who've been hating on our city for a long time. I know you love it. I see it every day.
Okay.
You'll need to show me.
All right.
I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh my God. Tells the guy, you're hurting our economy by showing people what's actually happening here. Oh, I'm fixing it. You don't need to show me. I see it every day. Okay, well... why do things still suck so bad? And I get it that a new mayor can't come in and change things overnight. But like, you should be saying, hey, thanks for showing people, you know, the suffering that's happening. We're doing our best to fix it. Not like stop. He's literally telling this guy, hide reality from the outside world so that our economy doesn't suffer. That's not on J.J. Smith. That's on you, dude. That's on the people who have been in charge in San Francisco. So I tend to think he probably did not know he was being recorded, but still, what a wild, wild, can you imagine? I mean, I'm sure Bruce Harrell has said dumber stuff, but hey, Jonathan Cho, stop going down to 3rd and Pike and showing people all the drug users. It's really hurting business. Would you rather have tourists come here and be surprised? I kind of think we should have tourists know what they're getting into because they're going to find out when they get here. Like, it's not like businesses are going to sign up to move into downtown Seattle or downtown Portland or downtown San Francisco without visiting the location first. So whether they find out from a video on the internet or whether they find out when they go check it out themselves, they're going to find out and they're not going to want to do business there because no sane person would. Just wild stuff. All right. Since we're already in California, let's stay there. So there's been this whole controversy that's very similar to what happened in Seattle after Chaz Chop, where the mayor, the police chief, all of a sudden all their text messages were missing. Oh, and the excuse was, oh, my phone fell in water. And then it was like, oh, my phone was set to to auto delete all of this stuff. So, Nicole, is this an old video from Fox 11? An old video. So, of course, one of the issues that, just to set this up, Mayor Karen Bass in LA was out of the country before those massive fires broke out. And she was asked at the time, like, hey, why did you leave the country when there was active warnings that we could be heading into a dangerous fire fire risk?
When I talked about it with the fire chief, what she said is that we have warnings of Santa Ana winds a lot. But predicting this, and you saw, we from the city, from the county, that level of preparation really didn't happen. So it didn't reach that level to me to say something terrible could happen and maybe you shouldn't have gone on the trip.
Why didn't
it happen? But to me, I don't know. I mean, I think that that's one of the things we need to look at.
Yeah. So one of the things they're looking at and investigating is through her text messages. And all these news outlets, as you remember, had reached out, tried to get text messages. And at the time that we last covered this, they were missing, right? And there was an accusation that maybe she had deleted them or whatever it is. Well, now LA, the city of LA, is saying there is no digital communications, that none exist. So the question is, and that's for the acting mayor. Right? So Karen Bass is out of the country. There's an acting mayor. And that acting mayor has no digital communications. You're telling me that the acting mayor, during one of the worst wildfire crises in our nation's history, so the acting mayor was LA City Council member Marquise Harris Dawson. So they're trying to figure out, okay, what was he doing while Karen Bass was out of town? And they're now telling KTLA that there's no digital communications whatsoever, including email, text, WhatsApp, any other sort of form of contact. And there's none from Harris or even to Harris over a period of several days. So you're telling me no one emailed? No one texted. No one called. The acting mayor of LA during a massive crisis like that. Of course they did. Of course they did. So where are those communications at? Very reminiscent of Chaz Chop in Seattle. Very reminiscent. Because the messages exist, obviously. The messages occurred. But now it's a pattern. We're not going to like what they show, so there are none, sorry, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Don't you believe that they have two phones?
Well, yeah, but you can request, if you're doing, at least our law is, that if you're doing city business on your personal phone, it's subject to public disclosure. Mm-hmm. And it's contingent on you to turn it over. Now,
there you go.
The only way to compel it is through a court order. So, for instance, if KTLA or someone had proof, like a text message that was given to them, like, hey, the mayor texted somebody from his personal cell phone, so now that makes it subject to public disclosure, then you can get a court to compel it. Mm-hmm. But if they just come out and say, nah, I don't have anything responsive to that. And what's the punishment, right? It pretty much worked for the city of Seattle. They got they must have decided that whatever grief they were going to get from the text messages vanishing would have been was not as bad as what the text messages would have shown. So they're making a calculation there, right? Do we just pay all the lawsuits and just say there's no messages or we lost them? Because what those messages will show is so bad that they can never see the light of day. So it's just wild stuff. But yeah, I guess this is what liberals do when they do something wrong. They just delete the evidence of it. Absolutely wild. All right, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll. Nicole, is that in?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I asked you guys, do you make a conscious effort to buy products that are made in America? And I was thinking about this because I have been seeing more and more online the labels. I think people are trying to lean into it who do sell products mm-hmm. made in America. And so now they're absolutely making sure that label is front and center. Like, hey, buy this. It's made in America. So what do you say, Nicole? Do you make, do you like actually seek out American made products?
I would not say that I seek out often. However, if I see made in America, I might be more likely to buy.
Okay.
So I get it as a marketing tactic because if you see made in America. I'm like, yeah, made in America. I'll get that.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of the same. Because, yeah. I mean, let's be honest. We both love our cheap stuff from overseas.
Right.
Right? But, yeah, if something says made in America, I'll be like, it'll be an incentive,
it's
right?
It's an incentive, right. It's a good marketing plan. So I appreciate them using it, I guess. And then at this point, you're telling them, or they're telling you, not as many tariffs, or you're not paying tariffs on this.
Yeah, and it also is going to come down, frankly, to the cost. Mm-hmm. Because if something is, I mean, I'm not made of money. If something is exceptionally more expensive to buy it in America, like, I would love to do that for that company. Mm-hmm. But if it's a few hundred dollars more, I'm sorry, I'm probably not going to. I don't know if that makes me a bad person. You guys are pretty split. 57% saying, yes, you do this. 43% saying, not really. Kind of for the reason I just said, Junie says, we can't afford to be politically correct in our purchasing decisions except for my cast iron. Only made in America will do. Is that a thing, that cast iron in America is the only way to go? Bloom Kitty, I can't afford, don't have time to always make that choice, but if I'm choosing between two items, that would be a deciding factor. Deb, certain types of products, notably food. I will agree with that. There are certain, steaks. I'm only getting my steaks from an American rancher.
Okay.
I'm not getting some Mexican steak.
Yeah, fair. Although sometimes other countries have higher standards than us, really, but...
Oh, like which ones, Nicole?
for their foods. I don't know all the specifics. I couldn't give you a list or anything, but for sure other countries sometimes do. So
I don't know.
That's the big food debate in our country right now, right? Yeah. Because we don't have the same standards. We allow things to happen to our food.
Yeah, well, I mean, we literally buy mm-hmm. an eighth of a cow. So
yeah, so that is different. Like, yeah. So then you're buying local and source. So you're sourcing it to a specific farmer or whatever you're picking.
Yeah.
Right. But when you're just buying it off the shelf, you might not know the specifics.
Yeah, like at an unnamed grocery store where it's like red and you know that they put dye in it to make it look that color. No, thank you. Mm. Sunny Day says, I've been praying for a serious attempt at an online made in America mall, similar to Amazon. Finding USA goods on Amazon is difficult. Their filters don't allow it. And when you narrow it down, the filters reset. Oh, that's interesting.
That's a really interesting idea.
There has to be something like that out there. That's like, this is a marketplace for made in America goods. I love that idea. If it doesn't exist, like, jump on that and then give us some of the profits. HTA, I try to. There are items we just don't make, or if we do, they are double the price for the same quality. Yeah, I agree. I think it's like, would love to, but price and quality has to come first. RV Goalie Life says, oh, I go to mammothnation.com for American-made products before I search elsewhere. I listen to Mike Rowe's podcast. He often interviews people you ought to know, and many are American entrepreneurs. So mammothnation.com, he says, and I haven't vetted this at all. I could be sending you to a porno site, but mammothnation.com, he says, has American-made projects. Products, not projects.
Products, huh? It looks like there's some sort of membership, so yeah, it's like it appears like maybe a different Amazon, maybe.
Yeah,
I mean, we pay a membership to that, so that might make sense.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. Hmm. All right, we'll check it out. All right, but yeah, pretty split on that one. So maybe more and more, though, if you start to notice like tariff prices, for instance, or at least it gets people thinking about it. Gosh, maybe I should be trying to buy more American-made products, but what is the alternative and what does that price look like? Because we're not all made of money. All right, comments from the show. Country Guy. So to get money to hire more officers, you have to raise your own money to hire new officers. That Bob Ferguson's promise with $100 million grant. Yeah, it's kind of like, you raise some money through new taxes and we'll give you some more money. As long as you have a police force that's built in our image. BJ Bumblebee, I'm never again going to vote for a teacher or a lawyer for public office. They are screwing this nation up. They need to just teach and litigate and stay out of our government. Yeah, the last at least four governors of Washington State were attorneys. So Bob Ferguson,
why is that a thing?
Jay Inslee, Christine Gregoire. Why is the other one Locke? Yeah. Lawyers. Mm. Interesting. Matthew Cook, TDS convention in Seattle. That's any day ending in Y. Yes, we live in a TDS convention. Good point. Pattern recognition expert. Brandy as moderator for Culp versus Inslee was what made me respect her, been a fan since. Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was a really annoying debate to moderate, though, because it was Inslee would not be in a room with Culp because of the pandemic. So they weren't on a stage. They were both in individual separate rooms remote. And it's so hard to moderate a debate that way. because it's like you can't see their body language. They can't really interrupt each other because they're not right. And they can't see each other. So it was just really strange.
But I agree. You did do really good.
Thank you.
That's
you know, I tried my best.
Yeah. Well done.
Old Sub Sailor with a $50 super chat. Oh, boy. It's really sad that most of us work for a living and can't always get off work to participate. We do need to actively resist Ferguson and his socialist communist plans. The way it's going, he will never leave office. The first American dictator. I thought that was Donald Trump, though. Diana Manning, regardless of if you caused this deficit, which he did exacerbate, a true leader doesn't whine about it. They just go and fix it. Big fat F for Bob. Oh, yeah. He's full F. F. And I was ready. I was ready to compliment him. I did. I was ready. I was willing.
You were hopeful.
If he did a good job, I would cover him accordingly. But he's not doing a good job, and he's a liar and a grifter and a gaslighter. Oh, let's see. Bill Biz. Woo, $20 super chat. Dory was right. Ferguson may be the most dangerous. Yeah, I agree. Let me see here. A couple. Papa Woody, absolutely psychopathic, Brandy. Thank you. Necro Two Shoes, which I still am not sure about this screen name and what that means. Remember some years ago, steak from Mexico ended up testing positive as horse meat.
Is that true? I don't remember that, but, and I shouldn't say, like, our farms, our farmers have standards, and I'm sure that they live up to them. But I'm just saying, in a, we have a lot of like the wheat, and that's why the gluten is a thing, and we have different standards here. So I don't know. Do your research on everything you buy, I guess.
Yeah,
cheapest isn't always best. That's for sure.
I agree. Street says, but I will say on the meat, buying a part of a cow if you can.
Oh,
that's the way to go. We love it. We stock our freezer.
It's so good too. I mean,
yes, the steaks are amazing. So we get all the good cuts of steak, and then you have the roast that we use for Thanksgiving and Christmas. There's all sorts of, like, and I've started to like cooking, what do you call them? Short ribs?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Why are you looking at
no,
me like
I
that?
Was like, as long as I don't have to look at the animal in the eye before it goes down.
Well, they're not I'm making you go kill it. The cow. They're bringing you the meat.
I know
you
it's
love steak.
It's the way
steak.
To go. Yes. It's the way to go.
Yeah, they are cute. It's kind of sad, right?
I know.
Street says, Pinocchio Bob, 100%. Rick E., what? No hiring link for the city of Poulsbo? Here you go. Come work for the city of Poulsbo as a police officer. A lot of people telling me where Washington County is as I was flailing live on air. I appreciate that. Why? We immediately stopped getting Molly Moon when they came against the police. I just laugh now. You reap what you sow. And Why also added, I used to go to Fainting Goat Gelato in Fremont. Not sure if they're still there. Hopefully they are, and hopefully they haven't gone crazy. I don't know if they've gone crazy. If they're in Fremont, there's a high probability that they have. So just check in on that. Let me see. I'll do two more off here. Dana Baker, this budget never would have crossed Dave Reichert's desk. Yeah, he would have told him day one, don't even think about bringing me a budget with increased taxes because I'm not going to sign it. And that would be a waste of your time. And that's what Bob should have done if he was serious about the no taxes thing. He would have said, day one, we're not raising taxes. We can't do it. You have to find cuts. But he didn't do that. And as I said, he came back and said, oh, but I didn't agree to the $21 billion in new taxes. So I'm now the good guy, right? It's all a psychological game of warfare. Sick of Wah. I agree we need to take the high road, but in this state, only the unhinged morons causing scenes get what they want. I agree. And that is very frustrating because you see them whine and cry and protest and name call and all of that, and then they get what they want. And you don't want to do it, but it's like, do we have to? I don't know. All right, good comments, everyone, per the usual. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, another win for Senator Fetterman, who says that his party has gone off the rails and they get everything they deserve.
I've been very, very, very pro-immigration, but I early identified the serious problem about the border, the security. And I've said this publicly, I'll say it now, that my party failed to secure our border. And we deserve to pay a political price for that. And I've been trying to find a way forward to move forward on those things. I voted for you, not because you and I agree on a lot of political things and we're in different parties, but you're the secretary and I'm a member of this committee. So I believe we have to find a way to work forward together.
Love John Fetterman. I love John Fetterman. Yeah, you do something that dumb, you allow an invasion into our country, and you deserve to pay a political political price for that until you fix it and until you show that you're not going to do dumb stuff like that again. Although it wasn't really Joe Biden. It was whoever else in the Democratic Party was controlling Joe Biden at the time. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. A special thank you to our paid subscribers who help make the show possible. That is just the truth. So if you'd like to become a paid subscriber, we have a great promo going on. It's the only promo we're doing for the rest of the year. We're trying to add 300 new paid subscribers over the next 30 days. So if you go to patreon.com/undivided, that's patreon.com/undivided, and use the promo code 300, that's the number 300-300, you get 30% off your first year. That's a killer deal. That ends up being like, I don't know, what, $50 for a whole year? Maybe not even that. That's great. I mean, I'm a little biased, but I think it's a good deal. All right, we'll see you back here tomorrow at noon.